A Florida man is under arrest after suspected mail bombs are sent to high-profile Democratic Party figures, former presidents, and critics of President Trump. Just ahead, the latest on this investigation and what authorities know so far. Then later, lots of amendments are on your November ballot. Two of them deal with gambling and dog racing. How should the state regulate or maybe even phase out these industries? This is the Florida Roundup from WLRN Public Media in Miami and WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville. I'm Melissa Ross. Tom Hudson is off this week. You can join the conversation at 305-995-1800 here on the Florida Roundup. We'll be taking your phone calls after the news. Welcome to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host in Miami, Tom Hudson, is off this week. And a Florida man is under arrest in connection with those suspected mail bombs that were sent to high-profile political figures in the Democratic Party and prominent critics of President Trump. Now, so far, authorities have confiscated 12 of these devices, two more of them today. They'd been sent around the country to everyone from former Presidents Clinton and Obama to the CNN offices in New York to financier George Soros and others. We're learning at this hour that the man under arrest is in his 50s and lives in Aventura, Florida. David Ovalle, reporter for the Miami Herald, joins us now with what we know about the investigation so far. David, thanks so much for being on the Florida Roundup with us statewide.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. Thanks for being with us. And as we talk about the arrest of a Florida man in connection with these suspected mail bombs, we want your calls and questions from anywhere in the state. Give us a call right now at 305-995-1800. That's 305-995-1800. Or tweet the show right now at Florida Roundup. All right, David, so the arrest was made a couple of hours ago, I understand. What do authorities know so far about the suspect?
Well, we're still, I'm sure they know a lot more than they've disclosed so far, but what we do know is that he's a man in his 50s, lives in Aventura, Florida. He was arrested at a auto parts store in Plantation. His van is being towed. Still unclear what his political leanings are, but we do know from our sources that his DNA was found on the envelopes of the packages. And so that means he has a criminal history, because obviously would imply that it's, you know, they had a match, they had something to be able to look for. So that's what we know so far. It's still a very fluid situation, and I'm sure we're going to learn more at a press conference they're going to have, feds are going to have mid-afternoon around 2:30.
Your outlet, the Miami Herald, has reported that FBI agents with the Joint Terrorism Task Force have been questioning this man. Is that correct?
Yes, he's being questioned at the FBI headquarters, and yeah, I mean, we still don't know the outcome of it, but I'm sure we'll hopefully learn more soon. Now everyone's trying to scramble around. We have a tentative name of a gentleman, but we're still trying to confirm it, and hopefully everything we'll learn pretty shortly.
Now, the Herald is also reporting that federal agents around the time of this arrest were examining a white van that appeared to be covered in pro-Donald Trump and other right-wing stickers. That does not mean, though, that this was this man's van, we need to stress. Can you shed a little light on that aspect of the story?
I haven't seen the photos in depth. I just sort of glanced at them, so I do know they were towing it from where they arrested him, but beyond that I couldn't really comment because I just haven't seen them up close. I'm not actually out of the scene there.
And it's 305-995-1800 from anywhere in the state, as we've learned at this hour that a Florida man has been arrested in connection with the pipe bombs. These were crude homemade devices anybody could make by Googling how to do it on the internet. They've been sent out to former President Clinton and Hillary Clinton, former President Obama and Michelle Obama, the CNN offices in New York, a financier named George Soros. Another bomb went out, or a alleged bomb went out today to Senator Cory Booker and former Director of National Intelligence Jim Clapper and others. 12 devices confiscated so far, David. And luckily, these devices did not detonate. Do we know how deadly they might have been if they had detonated based on what we know about their construction?
From what we know, what we've been told by our sources in law enforcement, they're pretty crude and still unclear. It would appear that they weren't serious threats in terms of like being close to, you know, being detonated. So it's unclear if they were just really poorly made or if they were just meant as a show of, you know, basically a terror tactic to try to intimidate, scare people. But no, as far as we could tell, they weren't, you know, sort of imminently about to explode when they were intercepted.
Let me ask you as well, as the arrest is just now happening, the investigation obviously commenced the minute these devices were intercepted in the mail. And conspiracy theories have flourished around who was behind these devices. There were false flag claims made that perhaps leading right up to the midterm elections, which are happening in just over a week, that perhaps figures that did not like President Trump strategically sent these devices out in order to make the president and Republicans look bad. There's no evidence of that. And of course, the investigation is still ongoing. But what do you think it says about the state of our politics, that these conspiracy theories can just erupt so quickly before the authorities know anything?
I think it tells you a lot just about the divisive nature that's sort of fueled by social media and by the internet, and then in turn by cable news, and so it kind of whips everybody up into a frenzy, which is unfortunate. I mean, I can tell you that immediately as we started reporting the story, I'm getting phone calls from sources not connected to the investigation, and because they think that I might have more information, and they want to know, hey, what party is he? What's his affiliation? And I think that tells you just a little bit about how closely people are monitoring this, and how much people want to see what the what team is it? You know, it's all very tribal politics, and it's sort of us versus them. And I think that that really gets people worked up, and so everyone's sort of waiting with bated breath to see what this guy's story is.
Right, and unfortunately, you're so right in the sense that the tribalism of our politics has partisans on both sides, hoping that the person or people that eventually are implicated in this are not part of the party that they are. It's so unfortunate that this is where we are in this country. And, I can't stress enough, let's wait and see what the authorities learn in this investigation. Let's go to some calls now here on the Florida Roundup. As we learn, if you're just tuning in, that a South Florida man, has been arrested in connection with those suspected mail bombs, 12 in all, that have been sent across the country to former presidents, critics of the president, others. Lots of calls already here on the Roundup at 305-995-1800. Tyler is in Orlando. Hi, Tyler. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. Actually, in a lot of my comments were kind of on what was previously being discussed as far as that goes with the conspiracy theories sort of kind of surrounding that. And I'm just, my concern is kind of getting that out of the discourse and be mainly worried about the actual events and the consequences of those events themselves. And I see that is not being taken as seriously as I think it should be by many, just because of those sometimes false notions of, the stamps weren't, postmarked, even though they were done by a private mail carrier, stuff like that. And it just worries me that it's more, less so the events and the worrisome consequences of events like these that are being discussed, and more so just the political tribe, just the tribal war, I suppose,
yeah,
between, the two sides. And that's just
right,
deeply worrying.
It is. Tyler, I think you're absolutely right. And thanks for that call from Orlando. David Ovalle. Yeah, people really capitalizing on this horrific act of domestic terrorism to try to score political points. Unfortunately, that is where America is right now. And this, let's be clear, David Ovalle, and by the way, David's with the Miami Herald, this was a significant act of domestic terrorism. Two former presidents targeted, former attorney general, a sitting U.S. senator, former director of national intelligence, and others, 12 in all. As we pointed out at the top of the hour, this is being investigated by the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force. And I know you cover law enforcement and you cover these investigations. Can you tell us a little bit more about how they work an investigation like this?
Well, especially in a case like this that sort of has many geographic moving parts. I mean, these were going all over the place. And, of course, many of the packages had return addresses for the office of Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's a Broward congresswoman. So, of course, the nexus is here, but then it's in New York, it's in California, it's in D.C. So it's a lot of moving parts, and it's a lot of cooperation. And for them to get DNA results back that quickly, you know, within days, shows you that how seriously they're taking it. Because, you know, in a normal sort of run-of-the-mill state case, let's say, you know, DNA might take weeks to come back. So that shows you that they're really rushing it. They really made this a priority.
305-995-1800 to join the Florida Roundup from any corner of Florida. Nick in Melbourne. Hey, Nick, thanks for holding. You're on the air as well now. Go ahead, Nick. All right, Nick, if you're not there, give us a call back. Lots of other calls, though, to get to. Russell in Boca Raton is with us. Hey, Russell, how are you doing?
Hi, how are you? Good.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to comment, but maybe I'm stating the obvious, but the crazy divided nature of the political environment now, psychological environment, it would support almost any weird conspiracy theory at this point. It could be people on the crazy people on the left that are trying to make the right, you know, trying to influence people to think that the right is doing something nefarious, or vice versa. It could be crazies on the right trying to, you know, trying to make it seem like it's basically to inflame the environment. It could be Russia meddling. I mean, it's really weird that none of the devices exploded. So that was either intentional or incompetence. But I would bet for it being intentional. The main thing that really, really is upsetting is that you hear virtual silence from Republican leaders, especially Donald Trump.
He has made a few comments about it. But, yeah, I mean, I should also let folks know that Vice President Mike Pence was in Jacksonville yesterday to campaign on behalf of gubernatorial candidate Ron DeSantis. And while he was here, he, condemned these acts of terrorism and called for a robust investigation. But Russell, I appreciate what you're saying. Now, let me ask you one more question. Do you think these devices didn't explode intentionally? So you think these were done as a way to sort of meddle in our politics?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's actually telling that my mind even goes in that direction. It's really symptomatic of what's going on here. You know, I am a highly educated, you know, professor. I don't like thinking this way. It's upsetting to find myself going down these paths of speculation. But just imagine what's running through the minds of millions of people as to what's going on. You know, it's either intentional if they didn't explode, or incompetence, or just dumb luck. But, you know, dumb luck would argue.
And I take your point. I think people, because of where our political climate is, I think you're right that many Americans are speculating in all kinds of ways. And I appreciate you sharing your thoughts about that. That's Russell in Boca Raton. We will have to wait, David, as you've said, to just learn more from the authorities. They're going to be giving a news conference in South Florida later on this afternoon. Meanwhile, lots of calls here on the Florida Roundup. Beth is in Jacksonville. Hey, Beth, go ahead. Hi, Beth. Are you with us?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes. Go ahead, Beth.
Yes. I have a very simple question. We've been advised to call the police or the FBI if we receive a suspicious package. What would make a package suspicious? I mean, how did they know these packages were suspect?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for that. David Ovalle, sure. What do we know about how these packages were intercepted, and what does constitute a suspicious package?
Well, clearly they all have similar markings. They have similar type fonts, similar printed out labels, so they can look for that. They have bomb sniffing dogs that that can detect these types of devices. So I know they were doing sweeps last night, there's sort of a pattern, and they're all very similar. So it's easy for them to be able to find them and differentiate them from the average Amazon package. The postal inspectors, I mean, that mail facility that some of these packages were found out, I mean, literally a million a day that's going through there. So it's no small task.
Sure. And now, haven't they determined that some of these went through New York and some went through Opa-locka, Florida? Is that right?
Yes. Well, the Opa-locka plant is basically a sorting facility. So it wouldn't have been postmarked there. Like, whoever sent them wouldn't have sent them from there, but they would have ended up there because whether they got returned, whether they just went there on the outbound, I think it's sort of a main hub of packages domestically here in South Florida. So, if the suspect was here, it's only natural that they would have gone to that facility.
It's 305-995-1800 across the state here on the Florida Roundup as a suspect is arrested in South Florida in connection with those suspected pipe bombs that were sent to 12 different figures, all connected with the Democratic Party, including two former presidents. Let's go now to Jane in Orlando. Hey, Jane, thanks for holding. You're on the air now. Go ahead.
I just want to make a comment. I think we have to remember that the president was elected as a minority elected president through the Electoral College, and a majority of Americans did not vote for him. So it's encouraged people to become very much one-sided for or against the president or for or against the GOP or the Democratic Party. And the root cause of some of this tribalism is, of course, hate and disregard for the respect of the rights of everyone. But I think we have to remember that this president was elected as a minority elected president through the Electoral College, and that seems to be encouraging tribalism in our country.
Jane, thanks. And I think that is an important point. It's certainly on the Democratic side. It has it's driving voter turnout in the midterm elections. It's driving anger at the president. It's also driving Republican supporters to be ever more supportive of the president. Jimmy in Jacksonville. Oh, we've dropped Jimmy. Let's go back to David Ovalle with just a minute or two to go before the break. David, you hear the emotion in the calls. And as you pointed out, the fact that people are following this story so closely as we get right up to the midterms in Florida with this hard-fought governor's race and this hard-fought Senate race, both of which are hanging by a knife's edge. It's so unfortunate that an incident like this has ratcheted up the political tension even more in this country. As you said, it's important for everyone to just take a breath and wait to learn more. Can you share any more about what you're going to hopefully learn later this afternoon from the authorities?
Well, I think obviously we're going to learn the political leanings of this person. And, it's possible that he doesn't lean one way or the other. He leans both. He could just be someone that's, likes to sow discord, some sort of anarchist type. I mean, I think that's the thing everyone wants to know. But in the end, it's going to be a criminal act, and they're going to want to prosecute him, so they're going to want to build a good case. And I suspect, that the terrorism investigators here are very, very good. They've had experience. We've had experience here in Florida with these types of connections over the years. So I think this will just only make things more divisive. But it's been going that way for a long time. So I don't
unfortunately,
unfortunate. Yeah.
wonderful reporting by you, and we thank you so much for joining us statewide with this just learned information about the suspect from Florida in these bombs. David Ovalle with the Washington, or rather with the Miami Herald. This is the Florida Roundup. More to come, including those ballot amendments. That's next. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Tom Hudson is off today. Well, we're going to shift gears a bit here, but still remain focused on the November 6th general election. If you live in Florida, when you go to vote, you will be confronted with 12, count them, 12 statewide ballot measures, two of which deal with gambling. Now, there's a lot to get into these measures, and they can be a little confusing, all of the amendments, frankly, but the ones involving gambling and dog racing are particularly closely watched. We're so lucky now to be joined by Eric Sarkissian. He covers gaming and other regulated industries for Politico Florida, and he joins us from our sister station WFSU in Tallahassee. Eric, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we're talking about Amendment 3 and Amendment 13. Let's go in numerical order and look at Amendment 3. Take a listen to this.
For decades, gambling issues were decided by Florida voters. Then, politicians took that power for themselves. Amendment 3 will return the power to the people.
Okay, is that true, Eric? Will Amendment 3 return the power to the people when it comes to gambling?
I wish there was an asterisk with that commercial. I actually heard it this morning. One of the issues that that actually it says it in the ballot language that people will see when they read the ballot on November 6th, that it says that this it immunizes the Seminole Tribe of Florida, which has six casinos here in the state. Two of them are going through some major renovations to become resorts, essentially Vegas style resorts. They don't have to go for this statewide referendum that Amendment 3 would require of pari mutuels if they want to go for expansion of gambling. And the other thing that's interesting is that it also doesn't – it changes the definition. It changes the playing field for what gambling is in Florida. The tribe operates under a federal agreement through its compact that it's subject to federal laws, and then there's state laws. And the tribe doesn't like the state laws because they're a bit weaker. So it's a big win for the tribe.
Interesting. And if you're just tuning into the Florida Roundup, there's gambling going on in these parts, in Florida, that is. But there are amendments on the ballot that would affect not only gambling, but dog racing. We want your calls at 305-995-1800. And so it's interesting to look at the foes and the supporters of Amendment 3. The foes include dog tracks, horse tracks, even NFL teams. Sports betting firms like FanDuel, they say a yes vote on 3 would shut the door to not only expanded gambling in the Sunshine State, but even on games that Floridians enjoy now, that are legal now. Is that true?
I think it would actually put the pari mutuel industry into a position where it's going to have to kind of stay put. There are some other parts in play here. It's a very complex issue that has to do with designated player gaming, and I'd love to explain that to you in a second. But the big issue is sports betting. FanDuel, you know, MGM, and you saw that I think it's the Miami Sod Farm, or there's a company on there that's given money to fight the amendment that is mysteriously the same address as the Miami Dolphins, Tampa Bay Bucks. They've given money as well. They all want to be able to do sports betting, and sports betting is a $250 million industry right now in Florida, and it's not even legal yet. So there's a lot of money to be made there. That's one of the big jewels here that I think both sides are fighting over.
Interesting. Okay, so this is something that, as you pointed out, involves the Seminole Tribe. And there's a deep history with the tribe when it comes to gaming. Can you talk a little bit more about that for people that haven't followed that closely?
Sure. The tribe actually had started off, if any of you have been to the tribe's casino in Hollywood, that is their signature Hard Rock location, and it's big and it's beautiful. And right now they're building this 30-story guitar-shaped hotel tower. It's amazing. They actually started across the street. It was a bingo hall. I believe it was in 1980 or 1979, either December 79 or in early 80. It was just a bingo hall, and they slowly grew this, and they started picking up revenue. Obviously, in Miami, heavy retirement population, so they got a lot of people that wanted to pass the time and enjoy themselves. And that slowly and gently had built up as they, gathered more patrons and also kind of had some back and forth with the legislature and the paramutuals. So, and now what you have today is huge. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it's 305-995-1800 as we talk gambling and dog racing on the Florida Roundup. You, the voter, will make some decisions about that on your November ballot. We want your questions and comments. You can tweet the show as well at Florida Roundup. Well, this is a high-dollar fight, then, over the Seminole Tribe against the paramutuals and out-of-state betting operators. Is this just a backdoor way for the existing gambling concerns to sort of protect their interest? Is that a fair way to describe this or not?
I wouldn't think so. I think this is actually a remarkable move by the Seminole Tribe, which obviously has been feuding with the paramutuals for at least the past, I think since they signed their compact with the legislature in 2010, the tribe obviously, which has done very well for themselves, and actually the medicine man, I'm sorry, it was the shaman who was at an event that I was at with the tribe in July, and he had said we came from the swamps, we had to deal with all the strife that was, we had lost our young, and now we're standing here in front of this beautiful hotel tower, again that guitar shaped tower, here for all of you. The tribe wants consistency. The tribe wants to know that their future is being protected, so they want to make sure that the paramutuals can't grow anymore. And then with the paramutuals, they see opportunities to grow, but they don't exactly involve the traditional paramutual wagering, which are the tracks. They're seeing a decrease in revenue from the tracks, whether they be greyhounds or thoroughbreds. They want to be casinos too. But then herein is the fight over, who gets to do what. The tribe, the legislature with the compact that they signed, the legislature said to the tribe, we're going to allow you to have exclusivity on casino-style games, which are the blackjacks, the roulettes, the slot machines. But then the paramutuals already had—they grandfathered eight of the casinos in Broward, Miami-Dade to allow for them to have slot machines, but the rest of the state cannot have them. So the tribe has this hold. But again, there's always been that fight that the paramutuals want to grow and the tribe doesn't want it. So here we have it. This is this amendment is basically the tribe saying this is their big win. This isn't a Hail Mary. This is them basically charging down the field as fast as they can.
As fast as they can. And if you're just tuning in, lots of ballot amendments will be there when you go to vote November 6th if you haven't already voted early. One of them is Amendment 3, and it has to do with gambling in Florida. In a moment, we'll talk about Amendment 13, which is closely related. Now, that has to do with dog racing in Florida. That's an even more intense emotional fight in some respects because it involves animals. Amendment 3 needs 60% of voters to pass, like all of the amendments, and it would require statewide approval of casino-style games like slot machines in the future. So what do you think about that? Give us a call on the Florida Roundup, 305-995-1800. Paul is in Miramar. Hello, Paul. How are you? Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. My question is just about the way they write the amendments. It's very confusing for voters, so thank you. When I went to go vote, there was someone there with more information on each amendment. But why is it that they continuously word it one way and it means something else, like Amendment 6?
I know, Paul. It's so true. There are so many amendments, and B, they are very confusingly worded. And I appreciate you pointing that out. Eric Sarkisian with Politico Florida. You almost got to wonder, are they doing this on purpose to confuse us and just hoping that they pass because people aren't even sure what they're voting for? That's the cynic in me. But he's right. I mean, these amendments are complex. They're confusingly worded. There's a ton of them. Only the most committed voters are going to really do their homework on these amendments. So what about that?
Well, not to jump the gun on Amendment 13, but obviously that amendment was challenged in Leon County Circuit Court, and because they said that the language of the amendment was misleading, and the title didn't match the actual language, and the argument that I believe that the state had was, look, we only had 75 words. There's only so much room on the ballot to explain these amendments, and that's where it's somewhat of an expectation that people would want to read up on it, and that's where, you know, people would go to, you know, read up in newspapers and whatnot. But I do agree with you. Even when I read, I have my sample ballot that I got from Leon County Supervisor of Elections, and that doesn't tell you nearly as much as, you know, what I would know about it. So I almost cringed when I read it, because it doesn't say much, and it's somewhat vague. It kind of mentions that the tribe is going to be, you know, is not going to be affected by the amendment. It doesn't tell everyone, you know, everything. So that's where, that's where I go straight to the amendment itself. But for, you know, for folks out there to pick mm-hmm. up a, you know, pick up a newspaper or try and read up on it.
Lots of calls as we talk about these amendments 3 and 13. Now, Amendment 13 is the other gambling amendment that you, the voter, will be asked to vote up or down on Election Day. It proposes a ban on wagering on dog races. And as we talk about that amendment with Eric Sarkisian of Politico Florida, we want to hear your calls, because greyhound racing, Florida is actually in a minority of states that's even still doing greyhound racing, and we have a lot of calls mm-hmm. about that. Let's go to Kelsey in Opa-locka now. Hi, Kelsey. You're on the air.
Hi there. I was just wanting to ask more about the moral aspect of racing dogs instead of the political aspect, because I understand that, you know, it's election season and a lot of people are worried about the politics, but what happens to the animals when they're too old to race, or say they're not good enough? I mean, people are breeding these dogs, so what happens to the dogs? What about the morals behind racing dogs?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you for that question. What does happen to the dogs? I know a lot of them are injured when they stop racing, Eric. Isn't that right? Which is leading to some of the controversy around this?
That's right. I mean, dogs do get injured. And obviously, unfortunately, dogs also die. I actually toured one of the Greyhound, the track in Sanford. It was a Sanford Orlando Kennel Club. And actually touring one of the kennels, they showed one dog that was actually, you know, happy and you know, getting up and wanted to jump on me. And they said, well, this dog's retiring. It's going to a family in Tennessee. I was like, I mean, it's retiring. It was only like a year old. They said, oh, it doesn't feel like racing anymore. And I got confused. Like, it just doesn't feel like it. I can't just tell my boss I don't feel like working, you know? they said, well, once the dog doesn't feel like, actually, you know, it doesn't have the, I think they said it doesn't have the chase in it, they'll take the dog off and then they'll put it up for adoption. The folks I talked to in Sanford, Orlando, they prided themselves that these dogs were going to adoption agencies. I think they said it was a 96% rate of dogs that were actually getting adopted. And they were very protective of that. And if one ever shows up in a shelter, that they'll pull it out and make sure it gets adopted. So that struck me, because obviously, you know, when you hear some of the other, you know, some of the other side, you're wondering if these dogs are just kind of, you know, put out to pasture and left, you know, left to fend for themselves or the wolves or something. So, yeah, it didn't seem nearly as stressful as I first thought.
Yeah. And I do know at some tracks, dogs had been given drugs. It's certainly a controversial topic as we speak with Eric Sarkisian of Politico Florida about these gambling amendments, one involving casino gambling, one involving dog racing. And if you're just tuning into the Florida Roundup, we're just trying to educate all of you, the voters out there, about what these amendments would do. And we want to know what voters and callers out there think about dog tracks in Florida. You know, Florida is one of a minority, only a handful of states, that is still doing dog racing. And due to a quirk in the law, the dog racing and the gambling facilities are intertwined. We're going to talk a little bit more about that on the show as well, and take your calls as we continue talking election stuff here on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Okay, let's go to Kathy in Bradenton now. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi. The dogs do live a terrible life, Eric. They live in cages. They are not taken outside. I've talked to people who have adopted them. I have friends that have adopted them. I have friends that work at kennels that where the dogs come in after they're done racing and the dogs are not in good shape. It's time to take dogs out of the racing. We need to stop using the dogs as a commodity. It's awful. I've been doing this grassroots campaign for a long time. This needs to stop. We need to vote yes on 13.
Kathy, what's your campaign? Tell me about that.
where we've been getting out. It's been grassroots campaign, so we've been doing pounding the pavement, talking with people and letting them know what 13 is about and what's going on. We're at the polls right now with the early voting starting. So we're at the polls. We're keeping our distance that we're supposed to, 100 feet away, but we're trying to educate the people on what happens to the dog. And we really need to stop using them as a commodity. It's not healthy. They hurt themselves. They're getting killed. Some are electrocuted. It's a terrible, terrible life for these poor dogs. It's fine.
Kathy,
let
thanks.
People gamble, but let's take the dogs out.
Thanks, Kathy. That's Kathy in Bradenton. And, you know, Eric, a rash of celebrities are getting involved. Have you seen this in Amendment 13 in Florida? Ellen DeGeneres, other big names in Hollywood are urging Floridians to vote yes on Amendment 13. And
James
for those
Bond.
That are just too... Yeah, right. What it would do is it would see Greyhound racing just be discontinued in the state by the year 2020. And since 11 of the nation's 17 Greyhound tracks are in Florida, naturally the focus of these celebrities is right here on Florida. And what are your thoughts about all of the animal rights activists that and celebrities that have really gotten involved in this cause?
I think at the end of the day, the philosophy here, and I work closely with both sides, whether it be the Florida Greyhound Association and also Grey 2K, which is a greyhound advocacy group out of Boston. And actually, when I just toured that facility in Sanford, I called the director of Grey 2K and I told him what I saw, and I said it seems like it was just a little one step up like an animal shelter, like a public animal shelter. And he goes, Eric, that's exactly what you wanted to see, because now think about that. Would you want your dog to be living that life? And that's right there is the philosophy. And it was Kerry Theowood. So he says those tracks, a lot of the tracks in the state are probably going to be of the same condition, but it's that working dog condition. And, it's the, hanging out in these cages with a piece of, remnant of carpeting on the floor. I think the dogs I saw get out 5 or 6 times a day. And I think the Grey 2K wants people to compare that to how their home pets. It's my dog at home, who happens to be a rescue dog. She sits in air conditioning all day and chases squirrels. And I usually work from home, so I'll let her run outside. I think that's Carrie. It's Mr. Thiel said that's kind of what dogs should be living, that kind of life, and not in this working dog setting. But then of course the trainers are saying the dogs love it and the dogs are happy. And I did. The dogs were happy when I saw them. I mean. But to the woman in Bradenton, to her point, I mean, a lot of these changes in safety measures were only implemented a few years ago after a lot of pushing from the legislature and also from advocacy mm-hmm. rights groups. And for whatever reason, they didn't want to until it was only in 2013 we started getting dog death reports. And if I quick story, one of the trainers actually called me and he had said, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, hold that story, if you could, as we take a quick break here on the Florida Roundup. But lots of calls as we talk about Amendment 13, up or down on dog racing in the state, phasing it out or keeping it. We want to hear from you, and we will get to those calls right after the break. Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. My co-host Tom Hudson is out this week, and lots of calls as we speak with Eric Sarkissian of Politico Florida about gambling and dog racing in the state. A couple of amendments that will be on your November ballot. Certainly people get very intense and emotional about animal rights and the treatment of animals, which is why this Greyhound Racing Amendment, Amendment 13, has generated a lot of attention, including from quite a few Hollywood celebrities. Will that make a difference in your vote? Well, let's get to a few of your calls right now. Lots of folks waiting on hold from all across Florida. Kyle is in Lakeland, Florida. Hey, Kyle, how are you this afternoon? Go ahead.
I'm doing great. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
So my comment deals with the people opposing Amendment 13. There's a large community of like dog competition people, such as like agility, rally, herding, who believe that the wording in the amendment leads to where any time-based competitions in the future might be able to be like stripped for dogs competing in those, even when they're not humane, such as like in race dog hunt, greyhound racing.
Okay, thanks for that, Eric.
I think that actually the amendment protects that. I think that there's one amendment that, that or there's one dog racing ban that comes to mind. In 1996, the Iowa legislature passed a law that banned all dog anything wagering on that has to do with the dog. They banned it. So, and I don't know if you've ever been to a Dachshund race or a wiener dog race. Sometimes they have them for charity. Those were banned too. So now as of last year, now the lawmakers are trying to figure out how they can get that back in there. It was too expansive. This actually, as far as I can tell and from the interviews that I've done, this would just impact wagered greyhound racing in Florida. It would affect the 11 tracks that we have here in Florida. It gives them the option that they can stop doing the live races as early as January of 2019, or they would have until 2020. So I think it's focused enough so that it's not going to impact other areas of dog competitions. There's some like there's French obedience training and whatnot, but there are some concerns from like the NRA about how some other sentences in the amendment that might affect other things that people really aren't aware of yet.
Gotcha. Okay, Shirley in Ocala. Hello, Shirley. What are your thoughts about Amendment 13?
A real quick comment about Amendment 3. I think that anything that we can do to help the Native Americans should be done. Because there's no way we can ever repay what the Western civilization invasion has done to them. About the dog racing, I'm a veterinarian in Florida, and I have actually rescued greyhounds that were from the racetrack, from confiscated. They were all confiscated because of poor treatment. And I agree with Kathy, who spoke earlier. The greyhounds... Of course they're happy when they get out of their cage. They're going to run around and be happy and have a little bit of freedom and attention. These are very sweet-tempered dogs. They're very sensitive to heat, overheating. They can die from just excessively hot temperatures in a room where we would think, well, that shouldn't bother me. It won't hurt the other dog, but it can affect a greyhound. I don't think that we have treated them fairly. They come out with scars. A lot of them never make it past the racetrack. When they do get adopted, they are most people can't handle them because as soon as they are let out of a door or a cage, they expect to run the track. So if you don't have a really well insulated, enclosed piece of property for them to run on, they need a lot of exercise, and they're not going to necessarily be happy. They're going to be antsy all the time. I don't believe in this as a way to make money. I think that we are excessively cruel to animals in general, and I would recommend that everybody vote yes on 3 and 13.
And okay, Shirley, a veterinarian calling from Ocala, Eric Sarkisian, Politico, Florida. What are your thoughts, and I know you've covered this since you cover gaming, about the argument she's making that Florida having most of the nation's greyhound tracks is a relic of the past, that that society's moved past this, and that we're just more woke, we're more sensitive to the treatment of animals, and that there's a moral argument, I guess, to phasing out these tracks. That's certainly the argument callers like Shirley are making.
That's one argument, but one thing with Florida's track industry, obviously in Florida the trainers and the other folks who work at the tracks are, you know, they'll tell you that they're going to lose thousands of people will be without jobs, but Florida's position in the greyhound racing industry nationwide is obviously we have a third of the tracks in the country, so we have there's dog breeding farms in Kansas that farm has already brought down production, like, you know, the number of puppies that they have by like 50%. They usually have 400 puppies, now they have 200 puppies because they don't know what's going to happen in Florida. It's the impact, and the track I visited in Sanford had actually said they've seen an increase of about 8% over the past year, and the manager of that track said that he chalked that up to, with all the scrutiny that the industry has faced, people are more curious and willing to go out there and try it out and start making bets. The Iowa greyhound racing industry went through the same reforms over the past few years. They're on the tail end compared to where we are now, and they're also seeing an increase. So the greyhound
And can you explain as well how the gaming industry, the casinos and so forth, and the greyhound industries are linked politically and how their fates are intertwined?
what the voters decide will affect, will go beyond the dog track in some respects.
The one thing that the one problem that the greyhound trainers have is that they don't really have as much support from the track owners as you would think that they would. There are a couple tracks. One's in Hallandale Beach, and then I know the one in the Naples Fort Myers track in Southern Lee County. The owners of that track, they would rather just stop it. This is something that they've wanted for years. They've wanted to do what's called decoupling, where they're able to no longer have licenses for their card rooms, which are very lucrative, that are beholden to, you know, a number of live races that go on at the tracks. There are other tracks out there that, you know, like the one in Sanford that doesn't have a card room. They would no longer be able to, they would take a major hit, but they would still have simulcast racing. They actually make more money off the simulcast racing, which is races going on in other parts of the country, even other parts of the world. That's where a lot of the revenue is coming from. So, but unfortunately, when it comes to this argument, for the most part, the Greyhound trainers have been on their own.
Okay. Anthony in Green Acres, Florida. Hello, Anthony. How are you? Go ahead.
Hey, I'm great. I have three quick points. One on three. I'm kind of like the veterinarian. I'd like to do what helps Native Americans. I'm not sure which way to vote on three to do that. Are the tribes supporting Amendment 3?
Are the tribes supporting Amendment 3? Basically, when it comes to Amendment 3, the tribes are for Amendment 3. So double check. Yes, the Seminole tribe is for Amendment 3. Correct, Eric. The dog tracks, the NFL teams, the sports betting firms are against it.
That's right. Actually, the tribe is $16 million, more than $16 million, and it's saying that they want this to pass. So they're very for it.
Okay.
Yeah, and then you had a question about 13 as well.
Yes, on 13. It's not something that's going to happen today, but what would make a lot of sense to me is, why don't we use people instead of dogs? I mean, people run track. Why not bet on people, you know, have like professional... I'm serious. I mean,
you mean like at the Olympics and bet on it?
Well, more like just your regular track, whether it's college, high school, whatever. And people, you know, you're going to have to pay the runners. It wouldn't be as profitable as right now where they get the dogs basically for free. But to me, that would make a lot more sense. But one other real quick point, Amendment 4, which you're not talking about, is maybe more important than who you vote for governor or senator, because you can re-enfranchise over a million Floridians by supporting Amendment 4.
Thank you for that, Anthony. I didn't mean to laugh at your idea. Why not? Amendment 4, which does look to be on pace to pass, would restore felon voting rights, Eric. We haven't gotten into that on this program, although we have on other shows. Now, let's point out, all of these amendments, Eric, require 60% voter approval. So
that's right.
Most of them are probably not going to make it. Hard to say,
right.
But, you know, it's a high bar, right?
It is a high bar. You know, speaking with the folks who actually, John Morgan and Ben Pallara, who were responsible for the medical marijuana amendment that passed in 16, they had tried that in 14, in 2014 election, which was a midterm. One of the reasons why it failed is because it was a midterm. Voters aren't out that much. It's just harder. It's harder to get the number of people out there so you can get the ratio that you need. You need that 60%. That's why you're going to see the legalization of marijuana will likely be on the 2020 ballot. Those are the big amendments. So yeah, but when in a midterm election, it's pretty tough to get it passed. Which actually brings you to the Amendment 3 debate too, which because it's not easy to do a referendum.
It's tough. Now, when it comes to these gambling and dog racing amendments, based on what you've reported, do you think either one of them is likely to pass or not?
Based on what I've seen with polling. There's polling that will show that Amendment 3 will definitely pass. The most reliable polling that I've seen of Amendment 13 has been that it's going to be shaky. So one of the biggest problems we have is that we do have so many amendments on the ballot, and people actually will get kind of literally they stop really caring after a while.
Yeah,
it's difficult
fatigue,
to get through a ballot.
Yeah,
yeah, or even so, yeah, as one of the callers. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, because it's at the end of the ballot; it's the last one on there.
Exactly.
So. But judging by the volume of calls we've received from all over Florida, we can't even get to them all. Coral Springs, Miami, Jacksonville, St. John's, Oviedo. Lots of people waiting to weigh in on the on Amendment 13, which would phase out Greyhound racing in the state of Florida by 2020. We just don't have time, unfortunately, to get to everyone. But there were folks waiting on hold, other veterinarians, people that wanted to express their support for continuing Greyhound racing in Florida. So this is such an intense issue. We'll wait to see if it translates into a lot of ballots cast on this. As you said, it is the last amendment on the ballot, Eric, so people need to wade through it. But Eric Sarkissian of Politico Florida, we thank you so much for being on the show today. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. It was an honor.
And that is our show today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Broadcasting in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Bridget O'Brien is our producer. Jason Zabka is the director of programming and technical director. The director of radio operations is Peter Mertz. Our theme music is provided by Aaron Libos. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.